This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
All eyes on the negotiators in Egypt about the Gaza conflict to bring it to an end. There are positives. For example, Times of Israel reporting in these last hours, mediators aiming to sign deal on Thursday to free living hostages, begin the ceasefire. There's also top officials head to peace talks as Hamas submits list of prisoners it wants freed. There's also President Trump may visit the region if deal is reached on ending the Gaza war. All positive, all going in a good direction for a ceasefire, for the return of the hostages, for food security and medical security for the people of Gaza, and to begin the rebuild. However, there are much larger stories contained in this awful war. And I welcome Hussein Abdul Hussein, a research fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, who helps me understand how Hamas has approached this war. Yes, bloody-minded, but else, otherwise there is method in the war fighting. And how the Arab world has watched this, the Muslim world has watched this, the whole world has watched this, and needs to understand there are strategies here that need to be solved. Or we'll go through this again and again and again. Abdul Hussein, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. You write very trenchantly that the Hamas army, the jihadists elsewhere, understand the powers of victimhood. What does that mean, victimhood, in their terminology? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. Victimhood is an old tool that has been deployed in this conflict over the past seven years. And under victimhood, once you claim it, you do two things. Number one, you're vilifying the other party. And here, vilification happens at the global stage, at the United Nations. And the point of it is to convince the world that Israel is too evil to exist. The second point that you use when you claim victimhood is that you give yourself immunity to whatever atrocity or brutality that you commit. Because if you're a victim, then people will sympathize with you. And no matter what you do, you are right. So this gives you some sort of immunization. And as such, we have seen many Palestinians and Muslims and Arabs who have been celebrating October 7. They do it using this tactic. They're saying you have to put this in context. Palestinians were living in the biggest open air prison. They were the victims. Therefore, they had every right to commit this massacre. And this is a point that I think, unfortunately, Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim intellectuals have not dealt with, and they should deal with or without an end to the war in Gaza.
We come to your essay. You write, friends of Palestinians, particularly in the Arab and Muslim world, have failed them. They are now, failure is a tough, that's a big mountain ahead of us. How have they failed, and do we know why?
There are two ways. If you're in the public arena, there are two ways to deal with public life. You can either be a populist and tell your audience what they like to hear, even if you think it's not correct, even if you don't think it's the best course forward, best way forward. And there's the way when you say what you think is true, even if this would not be well received among your audience. what most Arab and Palestinian intellectuals have done over the past 2 years is to tell Palestinians what they like to hear. And by doing so, they have dismissed all kinds of introspection, of self-critique, which should be the number one mission of all the intelligentsia, intellectuals, and academia. Instead of engaging in introspection, they've been using their skills to just double down on whatever the Palestinians are doing. And I don't think this is the best way. If you look up what the Israelis are doing on the other side, they have a bunch of intellectuals, and these intellectuals keep on practicing self-probing and introspection and self-critique. And I think this is a much healthier way of handling things instead of just blaming the other side for your own trouble and problems.
I want to understand the Arab and Muslim world, and I want to be specific here. Cairo, where the negotiations are underway right now. Cairo saw this at its border. It saw the tragedy and the suffering of the Gazan people. It completely understood the Hamas, because they're an outgrowth, I understand, of the Muslim Brothers, who are anathema to the Cairo administration now and, to my knowledge, the people of Egypt. They were brutal when they were in charge for some time. Egypt sees this. Egypt doesn't say anything. Why?
Again, to my mind, populism is at play. To the Egyptian government, it's much easier to say what the imagined Arab street would like to hear than to actually tell the Arab street what should happen. Mind you, John, the Egyptians are one of the biggest losers from this war. When the Houthis of Yemen started targeting Israel and targeting ships going through the Red Sea, the income of Egypt was halved from the Suez Canal, I think from $10 billion a year down to $5 billion. So this is a national interest for Egypt, and yet they never stepped up to force an end to this war. So this is an example wherein you follow populism and you do not really pursue your national interest. And on top of it, all the intelligentsia and the intellectuals and the academics didn't point out this failure on the part of the Egyptian government. They didn't say this is against our national interest. We should stop this war. We should force Hamas to surrender. None of this was debated or discussed.
The global concern for the Gazans being pushed back and forth, coming under attack, crossfire, the bombing, all of that. Egypt would not open its border to the Sinai, where there were accommodations available and could have been. And yet I do not see remarks about that. Perhaps it's in Arabic. I can't read many of the languages spoken. Did anyone come forward and say, open your border, Egypt? That will at least relieve some of the humanitarian suffering for 2 years.
Not from the Arab side, because they immediately incurred the illusion that if they open the border, that'd be the beginning of transfer, of just sending the Gazans out of the strip forever. And in order to keep the Gazans in the strip forever, they just let them die. And mind you, this is new in the rhetoric. I think back in the 1950s, when the strip was under the control of the Egyptians, the Egyptians were open to resettling Palestinians in the Sinai. And, you know, the iconic leader of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, he was about to accept a loan from the World Bank to build his dam and take in Palestinian refugees from the Gaza Strip. So back at the time, it was not as anathema as it is today. And again, this is because of the politics and the populism, not because of actual interest.
Let's go to another Arab capital that much in the news, Doha, Qatar, Al Thani, signing on, we're told, to this peace deal. And yet we're also told, and I don't prove this, I just repeat what I read, Doha is a sponsor of Hamas, sponsor of the Muslim Brotherhood, sponsor of chaos in the region, author of the agitprop stream that comes out of Al Jazeera, all of that. And yet, is there no self-awareness of how this is not leading to enlightenment. It's leading to mass death and damaged children for decades yet to play out this war. Does Doha not see that? I visited Doha. They're like everybody else. They have children, they have families, they have wishes. Why not speak?
Well, it's most probably political expediency. And Doha probably thinks that they can use this whole Gaza and Palestinian issue as a tool, as a vehicle toward expanding their influence, at least their soft power. And to my mind, when you look at all the factions involved, regional, domestic, local, international, I think the Qataris have played one of the worst roles in having this conflict go on and on. They could have twisted the arms of Hamas a long time ago and forced them to surrender and forced them to accept the same points that they're forcing Hamas to accept today. So if you saw President Trump's plan for Hamas to surrender its arms and to not be in government in the Strip post-war, this could have happened on the second day of the war, on October 8th. And if this had happened, it would have ended it. Now we hear that the Qataris are trying to push Hamas to accept these two points. Well, that's good, but that's 2 years late. So, like I said, I think the Qataris put political expediency first, never the interest of Palestinians or of the others involved in this conflict.
The non-Arab states, that would be Ankara, notably Turkey and Indonesia, they see what you're talking about. These are very discerning diplomats and do not speak out. Is that pressure from the Arab world? Is that what? Banding together in the face of the infidel? What makes the intellectuals of those countries not say, really, Hamas is playing you, stop it?
Now, with all due respect to the Indonesians, I don't think Indonesia is a player in this. I mean, even if they sign on a statement or endorse it, they're very far away. They don't have skin in the game. They don't have investments or people over there. There's not a significant number of Palestinians or Arabs who live in Indonesia. So other than both sides being Muslim in terms of religion and faith, there's nothing as much in common in terms of national interest. Now, on Turkey, of course, Turkey is much closer and Turkey is different. But I think what the Turkish government has been doing is that, like the Qataris, they're trying to use political Islam to expand their influence in the region. And again, the Turks, before all of this happened, they were the imperial power. I mean, the Arabs revolted against the Turks to eject them from the region. If you know any history, you would know that the Palestinian flag itself was the flag of the Arab Revolution against the Turks. So it's ironic now that almost a century later, we get the Turks back negotiating on behalf of the same Arabs who had ejected them a century ago. So again, it's all politics. And of course, everyone twists Islamism and Islam the way that suits them best. And I think, on the part of Turkey, they're only looking for ways to keep themselves in the spotlight without actually being helpful on the ground.
I'm speaking to Hussein Abdul Hussein, a research fellow for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We could go on with capitals and saying what the challenge is, but what is to be done when we come back? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.